during the summer, our beloved brother Steve was presenting lessons on creation versus evolution. And the reason why he was doing that, we had a number of young adults who were going off to college. So he was refreshing their minds and going over topics of that during the summer. We were very grateful for that, very considerate. And then he continued that by having at some Sunday evening classes to talk about evolution. And he had, if you recall, some Sunday night sessions on the solar days. And in one of those episodes, he made reference to the class that I taught on evolution. And he made some comment like this. He said, when Rocky taught evolution class about 70 years ago, and I said, what? And he said, wait a minute, 70 years ago? If I was over 20 then, 20 plus 70 would mean I've been over 90 years old teaching it. So I said to myself, boy, I bet it has a refresher class while I'm still around. So I thank for Steve and that. This class and the adult class in evolution we taught back in 2001. So it's been 24 years. We've had two or three classes in the high school class and one class in the 7th and 8th class on evolution versus creation. So many of these things, you may say, this is not a refresher. You expect me to remember things all the way back from 2001, assuming you were here? Well, we've heard things about evolution. We've heard sermons. We've a lot of discussion done in sermons and whatnot. So hopefully a lot of these things will be refresher. So we've got 26 questions, so we're going to go through these questions here. The first one here is define the theory of evolution. So what is the definition? Okay, very good. Here is the definition we used in the class from based on many studies, years of study on the subject. It's a theory that millions of years ago, lifeless matter gave origin to small living things which have evolved into all living animals, including man. There's five important elements in this definition. The first one is it is a theory. The theory of evolution was developed by Charles Darwin in 1859. It's been over 170 years. And over that span of time, it is still a theory. It has not been proven. And as time continues to march on, it loses a lot of relevance as it continues on. So it is a theory. It is not proven. And the evidence that's cited by evolutionists to support it really do not support it. And we'll see that here. The second element is large amounts of time. Anytime you hear someone talking about millions and billions of years, likely that is connected to evolution. The third element is life began from non-life. So they believed inanimate material eventually evolved into a living cell. And that living cell that has then progressed to create all the things that we see in life today. The fourth element in this process is one kind develops into a new and better kind. So there's a constant advancement. And so kinds are changing, becoming more advanced. And the last part of it, of course, it includes the origin of man. I asked in question number two about some characteristics, four characteristics of evolution. You had four things to fill in the blanks. So what about number A? And I gave you some hints. Self, there's self in all four of these attributes. What ones did you find in 4A or 2A? Self-starting. Self-improving. Self-contained. Self-explained. So those are the four selves. Now, the thing about self-explained, you say, well, if it's self-explained, we would know exactly what is happening. What the evolution will tell you on self-explained is just given more time, we're going to advance and be understand this thing more and more with time and uncover new things. So they say it's self-explained. Okay, the second attribute, again, some more blanks. There's no need for God. So you say, why do we want to study about evolution? This is a doctrine that your kids are being taught in schools. It's in science books. It's denying, basically denying the existence of God. It's basically atheism. And so we know that is a false doctrine. And so no need of God. So how critical is it to know about evolution versus creation? Talking to people, and people are who have degrees behind them, saying that there is no God. What is the third attribute? Special kind of change. It's like I referred to in the definition. One kind is developing into a new and better kind. And last attribute of evolution. Yeah, the process is still taking place today. Now, we're going to talk about that a little bit more as we get into the discussion here later on. This being a very important, critical attribute that really important, has dramatic consequences. Okay, question number three is, which of the following pictures are either connected to or related to evolution? And of course, I'm going to show you some pictures. But before I do that, you say, why do we want to know this? And there's really two important reasons. So if we have this evil doctrine of evolution, we know who's the source of all evil doctrine, right? It's Satan. You know, Satan is very deceptive. And so we as a Christian, we have been warned, be aware of the evil schemes of the devil. And so we might see something, say, that's evolution. It may not be evolution. Or we might see something, this is okay, but it might be evolution. So we have to understand what is evolution and what is not. So that's the first important thing. The thing that we're supposed to be alert to false doctrine. The second thing is important while we go through these pictures here is that evolution will tell you, this is evolution. You see it in the natural world. This is the proof. And some of the proof is that is not evolution as we define it here in this definition. So these pictures are pretty important. So as we go through there, this is going to be a class interaction. And what I'm going to ask you to do is we're going to look at a picture, and I'm going to ask you, is this picture connected to or related to evolution? And you tell me yes or no. So let's begin. The Big Bang Theory, is it connected to evolution, yes or no? Very clearly, Big Bang. And again, as we mentioned here, this talks about the origin of the universe without God. It's kind of important. Okay, now we have the dinosaurs, all these different type of dinosaurs. Is this an example or connected to, does that prove that there's evolution when you have the dinosaurs? Yes or no? No. And, of course, the key thing here is all these dinosaurs are one kind. And we should not be scared about dinosaurs. We find dinosaurs in the Bible. There is overwhelming evidence of the bones throughout the world that dinosaurs exist, but they're all the same kind. They're all part of one kind. This is not an example of evolution. Okay, let's go through this example here, the butterfly. Oops, wrong button here. So here we have the butterfly. And we know how the butterfly evolves, right? You start with a cocoon. Then it morphs into a cocoon, basically, from a caterpillar to a cocoon. And you look at this, and boy, there's a lot of change going on here. Go from a caterpillar to a cocoon. And within the cocoon, you can start seeing a little bit of the butterfly, and then you have a butterfly. Wow, that's change. It's changing. Well, is that an example of evolution? No. Right. So that's why we started the class of what evolution is, one kind becoming a new and a different kind. And so here you have just the butterfly being created through the process that God set in place. So your point, Steve, you were, what were you trying to get at other than?
The word evolution just means change.
Right.
So there's different, as you know, different right. kinds. So that needs to be clear.
Right.
Because they'll say, yeah, that's changed.
Yeah. So that's why the definition is very important. And Steve's make a very important point. Evolution will say change. You look at the natural world, it is changing. Because it's changing, that's evolution. No, not according to the definition. Yes, evolution can mean change. We're talking about the theory of evolution as we defined it very early on. So good point you brought up there, Steve. So here we just basically have development for one kind. It is not an example of evolution. So here's another example. The origin of man coming from chimpanzee to intermediate species, according to them, missing link, then we have man. Is this evolution?
Yes.
Cool, it's evolution. And origin of man from a lower kind. And we know that point we made, evolved animal from the monkey. Okay, another one. Eat, drink, and be merry, for there is tomorrow. Is that concept related to evolution? Yes, because there's no need for God. When you die, that's the end of it. Okay, let's look at the next picture here. This is a photograph taken in 1985 by the Hubble telescope. It's called the Pillar of Creation. This particular astronomers will tell you this is found. It's called the Pillar of Creation, and it's found in the Eagle Nebula region, and it's in the constellation of Serpens, about 6,500, according to them, 6,500 light years away. Why they call it the Pillar of Creation, if you look at this middle pillar here, is you'll see that there's a star there. You have to look real closely, but they'll say, well, there's a star being formed there. So there's a star at the middle of the finger, and they say, well, stars are being formed in the universe. So is this an example of evolution?
No.
God set in certain creative processes. Even though the stars are being created, that is not an example of evolution. Now, that star then turns into a planet like Earth and developed life. Yeah, you don't have any examples of that. So, again, astronomers will say, well, look, stars are being formed. That's creation. New things like just the Earth was. No, that is not an example of evolution. I will mention stars. For me, stars do not evolve into complex planets with life. So it's interesting, and of course, astronomers try to find that planet like the planet Earth. But at this point in time, they have not found it. This is the next example. This one maybe stump you. You'll see this advertised when you buy dog food in a commercial. And the point they will make, look, you want to feed this dog food to your dog because dogs have evolved from wolves, and your dog is going to be strong like a wolf. So is this an example of evolution? It is an example because wolves and dogs are of different kinds. And the question to think about here is, a lot of these things you just think through and you'll see that it's an example of evolution. Okay, if this is not an example of evolution, it's truly happening, wolves are evolving from dogs, well, let's go out there and find a wolf that's half dog and half wolf. You don't find it. You have a separate class. Now, what people tell you, well, look, I can take a wolf, a baby wolf, and train it and be really tame, but it's still a wild animal. So there is no intermediate species. So dogs and wolves are separate. So this is, yes, is an example of evolution. Keith, you got a question?
I consider them both the same time. I mean, there is proven, shown of adaption, but I would say that both of them are the same kind. They're both dogs being the higher class, separated down into wild or domesticated, but I mean, they are the same kind. They're dogs.
Okay. There are some questions on that. Keith, I'll grant you that. I won't get into all the details of that, but I appreciate you bringing it up. I mean, you're going to get questions like that, so we need to be responsive. We'll answer that. I'll get back with you on that one. Okay, 7 days of creation represent millions of years. Is that related to evolution? Yes or no?
Yes.
Clearly, his team really went into that. The days of creation are 24-hour days. And now, sometimes people will use the Bible and evolution and say they're both correct. And this is one of the lessons Steve had about theistic evolutionists. They believe evolution. They also believe in the Bible. So what do? They got to take these 24 solar days and represent millions of years. So it is definitely related to evolution. Okay, the origin of the Earth. Evolution, yes or no, is 4.6 billion years older. Different ages, but about that. Is that evolution?
Yes.
Yes. The old Earth is required for the theory of evolution to take place. Okay, the last one here. Here's a tree of some finches. Finches are small birds. Charles Darwin observed these finches on the Galapagos Island. This is some of the data that he collected to develop his theory of evolution. You would note it just in the Galapagos Islands, the great variety of finches. You have some of these finches here that are seed eaters. You have others here that eat cactuses. Then they start eating bugs. Some eat eating bugs, insects. And then you have this other group here, the wobbler finches. And the thing to note that Charles Darwin observed is look at the beaks. See how their beaks are changing? And the ones that eat all insects that are very narrow and thin. The one who has to crack seeds have big, large beaks to give them the strength to crack the seed. So this is showing you an example of evolution. And this is one of the cited examples. The data he collected, this is some of the stuff he collected. He came up with this theory. So is this evolution, yes or no? No. Of course, very clearly, variety within kind, all those are finches. They're not any different. All right, so let's go on to question number four. Then we talked about evolution on the creation, and then we want to define what creation is. So how do you define a creation? After God bringing all things in existence. Bring in here definition. Don's got the good important points here. There's one missing point here, but I'm sure she knows that it's included. Bring into being the earth, the heavens, the plants, the animals, and mankind by sudden creation described in the first two chapters of Genesis. Now, just like evolution's got characteristics, creation has characteristics. So what's the first one? 5a. God was creator. It is supernaturalistic. When you see that term supernaturalistic, it's talking about it violates natural laws. It's beyond the physical laws of this universe. The second attribute. It's externally directed. The third. Had a purpose. And the last one, it is what? Complete. And when we say complete, just remember what point I made earlier. God has put in creative process, right? New babies are being born. New plants are growing. Stars are being formed. And so that doesn't mean there's not new things. There are creative processes that God put into place that are still happening. But in terms of those processes, he put them into place, and they're active and alive. Pardon? Right. Right. Question number six, what is the evidence for creation? Pardon?
We're here.
And who are we? Mankind, okay. There's a broader point that covers what Don was saying, but what is some other evidence for creation? Okay. More basic than that, revelation has been revealed. We just said the definition is what we find in Genesis 1 and 2. And then we have what Don includes, man, we're here, talking about the natural world. Okay, question number 7. How many times does the word God or references to God appear in Genesis chapter 1 through chapter 2, verse 4? How many times did y'all come up with? 46. 55. Okay, Susan always, and we use word counts, Susan always has the highest number. I don't know what it is with you, Susan. You always have more number than even the teacher has. Okay, there's 50 that I count. So we have to show the text where it is. And some words you might have split it to two, and I might is one. But there are 50. What's significant about that is in chapter 1, there's only 31 verses. Chapter 2, we add 4 verses. There's 35 verses. There's more references to God than there are verses in the section of the text. So it just tells you this whole Genesis 1 and through 2, 4, centered upon God and his creation. It's just overwhelming. And sometimes it'd be interesting to go through that to see, just, you know, mark it up. It's pretty impressive. So when did the creation begin? In the beginning. We take that very nonchalant. It's in our Bible, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning. We don't understand the full significance of that. In the beginning marks the beginning of time. If you're in before the beginning, there is no time. Can you imagine what it's like? There's no time. And there's actually going to, we're going to see there's no essence, there's no physical universe. So in the beginning is really, I like to call it, time equals zero. God starts time. He starts creating the universe. It's time equals zero. So how did God create the universe? Spoken to this, and Wally talked about that here. Okay, question number 10. How does the scripture describe what the world was like on the first day? Formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And if you go and read that, it says, what is the deep? It tells you about the waters. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. the deep. So there's water there. God on the beginning of his creation creates this, and you know it is a situation here we can't imagine. Can you imagine anything formless or void, dark? Something beyond our imagination. But he revealed that's the state. Okay, the next thing, question number 11. We want to look at the things that we have that has been revealed on specific things revealed about what was created in the 16 days, and it's broken up by days. So day one, I have two items. Now you might say two items. I only see really one, but there's actually two. So what did God create on day one? Okay. Okay. Light and dark. Okay. When he created the heavens and the earth, its condition was void and darkness was upon the deep. So consider this, what he created. The first thing is, before in the beginning, another something we can't understand or fully comprehend, there is no matter. Matter has not existed for eternity. He's creating matter. And this in day one, he has matter. The second thing that he says very clearly is light. Well, we know it's not light from the sun. It's like light here. Light is a form of energy. So what I understand what he did on day one is basically create matter and energy, the basic fundamental things of this universe, matter and energy. What about day two? What did he create? Okay, and what do you, is there a name for that?
Land.
Land? Okay, the sky. Or American Standard has firmament. New American Standard has expanse. When you look at what that is, he separated from the waters from above and the waters above. And with the waters above, he called the firmament. And I understand what that is. That is the sky. Okay, day three. What did he create on day three? Right. Right. So evidently, on day one, when he created this matter, he created land. The land was not visible. It's beneath the water. So clearly, in day three, he says he caused the dry land to appear above, and he separated the waters from above. Well, he has the waters. He gathered the waters in day one. So he created the dry land. It was there, but beneath the water. He caused the dry land to rise up above the water. And then, as he collected the water, he called, what is that? The sea. So we have the dry land and the seas. I want to get off on some tangents on that, but we'll just keep on going on. So what other things did he create on day three? Vegetation, grass, American Standard, and King James or New King James. The fourth item created on day three? Okay, plants yielding seed. And the last one? Fruit trees. Day four, what did he create? Sun, moon, and stars. You know, sometimes when I say a prayer, when I talk about looking at the creation, I make it important. If you look at what he said about the stars, he says, he created the stars also. Think about the stars in the universe. The earth is insignificant to the rest of the universe. Right? There are millions and millions of galaxies and solar systems. We don't even know how many stars and planets there are. And God handles that. Oh, I just created also. Again, you see the magnificent power of God, of what he can do. Create basically the rest of the universe just by speaking it, and it all happened. The immensity of the universe is, to me, beyond comprehension. Okay, day five. Okay. He calls them great sea monsters. King James has great whales. New American Standard 95, great sea creatures. And you say, well, what is that? Well, those are basically, some question of what those exactly are. You say, well, they're whales. Well, all the versions except for New King James have the whales, but the great whales. This is a place where you say, okay, if they're dinosaurs, where did the dinosaurs come about? Where are they in the Genesis? Well, here's one place. This is the water dinosaurs, the one, and he calls them great sea monsters. Then he calls the water animals, right? And last one, what was the last thing in day five? The birds. Okay, day six. Four things. First one, cattle. You say, well, what about the sheep and the other type of animals? Evidently, cattle represents all the domesticated type of animals. And cattle is used to represent it. figure of speech, we know synecdoche, a part of the whole. These are all the domesticated land animals. Next item. Creeping things, the insects. Third item. Beast of the earth. This would include the wild animals, possibly the wild. This could be the dinosaurs in this category. Not sure. And the last thing that he created was what? Okay, mankind, man and woman. Yes.
So I get the great sea monsters, but in verse 20, he talks about that the waters came with swarms of living creatures. That's different than the great monsters.
Right. That's why I have two of them, right? The water animals, that would include that group, and then the great sea monsters would be the other group.
I didn't see that on the day, but I just
saw that. Well, I could have used the actual words, but look at verse 21. There's your great sea monsters and every living thing that moves. I would put that in the thing that swarms of living creatures. But good question, Don. Okay, question number 12. How long did it take God to create the fruit trees on day 3? He spoke it. That question is not, the more I look at it, is not the point I'm trying to get to. The point I'm trying to get to here is fruit trees take fruit, right? An apple tree, it takes time for that tree to develop apples, right? When God created the fruit trees on day 3, they're fully developed. And what's this? This is a critical, important point when you look at creation versus evolution. God created things with the appearance of age. And this explains a lot of things that scientists observe. For example, one of the most common things when people talk about an old Earth, they say, well, look, we got these scientific methods called radioactive dating, where we can measure a rock or a fossil and say, hey, this thing is millions and millions of years old. We can actually measure and determine that. And the way they do that is in radioactive dating, there are radioactive elements which are unstable, and they give off radiations, neutrons. They give off radiation. And those daughter components or the parent components change into other things. For example, uranium-235, it's radioactive. Its daughter component is lead. So when a scientist doing the dating, they'll take a rock and they'll measure the amount of uranium-235 and the amount of lead. And they say, well, you got this concentration and there's a constant radioactive decay rate. So knowing the decay rate and the concentration of uranium and lead, they say, well, that shows that this rock is so many millions of years old. The problem with that is God created things with the appearance of age. This fruit trees was, you look at that fruit tree and say, well, wow, that must have taken, you know, 20, 30 years. God created the universe with the appearance of age. And so when scientists say these things like that, just remember this important point. God created things fully developed. Question number 13, what are four functions for the lights in the expanse? You can find in verse 14. Separate night and day. For signs, I hear seasons, and for days and years. So God gives us these functions. We're enjoying, hopefully, maybe the start of the fall, the cooler weather. What God pushed the designed the earth and its rotation around the sun and the tilt of the earth to provide us different seasons. And so the planets, the earth, and the sun serve a purpose. And days and years. Just think about that. How do we measure a year? One revolution of the earth around the sun. That's 1 year. What about one day? It's one complete revolution around its axis. So the earth and the sun and the moon are for days and years. And separate the day from the night. Okay, question number 14. How was mankind created relative to God? Created in his image. Question number 15. We've talked about this verse so many times in so many different settings. What verse in the Bible tells us that God's power and divinity are clearly seen in the natural world? Romans 1:20. Now, this is such a powerful verse, I would encourage you, if you already don't know that, to be able to cite it by memory. So let's go through Romans 1:20 without looking at our Bible, right? For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, or eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood by what has been made, so they are without excuse. So, why do we have such a magnificent universe and the complexity of the human beings? It all shows it's God's proof that He is the Creator. And it's such an overwhelming proof, not one person, when they face Jesus Christ, you're going to be able to say, I didn't know there was a God. Because God has overwhelmed you. So all the scientists, with all your degrees, and all the evidence out there, should compel them to know that there does exist a God. So, beautiful universe that we have to know that God does exist. And it's so powerful, so magnificent and intricate and powerful that there's no choice but to know that there is a God. Right, the firmest declared His glory.
His day didn't have an excuse.
Yeah. Why was woman created for man? He was alone to be his companion, Genesis 2:18. Who is the father of evolution? Charles Darwin. What did Charles Darwin say in question number 18? Was the most uncertain thing in his theory? A lot of things he said, but the most important thing that he mentioned was the most critical thing was about missing links. So here is a quote from Charles Darwin, Origin of Species, chapter 9. Now think what he says here. Listen very closely. Now he examined all the evidence, he collected all his data, took many years to develop the theory. This is what he says. Why then is not every geological formation and every stratum full of such intermediate links? Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain. And this, perhaps, is the most obvious and serious objection which can be urged against the theory. Now, that was in roughly right around 1859 or there before that. But it hasn't changed. Intermediate links are still not present. Let's say that Elizabeth here lost her iPhone. And she goes to Doug. I said, Doug, can you make an announcement? I said, I lost my iPhone. I have a missing iPhone. And so Doug gets up and says, everyone, look around. Elizabeth lost her phone. He has a missing iPhone. And then Susan looks in her purse and says, look, this iPhone here. Where did this iPhone go? Oh, it's Elizabeth's. She found it. So do we still call it her iPhone a missing iPhone? No longer missing because it's been found. Why do they keep calling missing links? Because they have not been found. Now, there is a man, his name is Jay Gould. He's a paleontologist, one who studies fossils from Harvard. And he passed away. He was very honest. And he said, there's no evidence for missing links. He's a paleontologist. That's his expertise. He says, there's just none. So he came up with a different theory called punctuated equilibrium, which says you don't need any intermediate links. Things just abruptly change from one kind to a new and better kind. Punctuating equilibrium. But he admitted there are no missing links. They have not been found. Question number 19. What are three assumptions of evolution? Life. A lot of these we kind of covered. Life began before intelligence. Matter is eternal. And the last one is the best naturally survive. Question 20, how old is the earth according to scientists? And how old is the earth according to the Bible? You've heard various numbers. The most common number is 4.6 billion years. Some advanced all the way up to 5. And of course, we know the Bible does not say how old the earth is. You can use the genealogies and come up with an estimate. And some of the genealogies are incomplete. Some things are missing. But even taking that, you can't get to millions of years old. If you take the genealogy and make some assumptions about some of the gaps, you probably look right around 6,400 years old. Some estimates have all the way up to 10,000. But again, the point is the Bible and the genealogies indicate a young earth. You can't even get close to a million years. Okay, the next several ones, we're going to go ahead and skip for sake of time. So we talked about missing links. Evolution said, yeah, we got lots of missing links. And they got names for them, and they've studied these different missing links. So I ask you about which of the following are missing links. Now, I'm not going to go through the detail. The slides will be posted to the website, and you can look at the detail. But I asked you this question, on these missing links, are they an ape, a missing link, or is it a man? The first one is Rampithecus. Again, I'm not going to get into the detail for sake of time, but no, he's not a missing link. He is an ape. And the details of that, look at the slide. Next one is Australopithecus. Is he a missing link? No. He is also an ape. And again, you'll look at the details to understand how we arrived at that. The third is Homo erectus. Is Homo erectus a missing link? Very common one. No, he is a man. And the last one is the Neanderthal man. No, not a missing link. He is a man. So again, these will be contested in the scientific world that they say these are missing links. But when you look at the evidence and what they have found to justify that, you find it very, very faulty. Okay, question number 22. What is the law of biogenesis and how does it conflict with evolution? Life comes from life, and it is a law. It is not a theory. It's been proven. I won't get into the details when you're familiar with how the law of biogenesis came about. Does it conflict with evolution? Yes, it does. Because what do we say about our definition? Evolution says evolution came from non-life. Now, you would think, now think about this. You say, man, it's a slam dunk. I got you, evolutionist. This proves it. The law of biogenesis. You know, they say, yeah, we agree with the law of Genesis. But then how you reconcile that, your theory? What evolutionists will do, they will change the definition. They'll go back to the theory of evolution. So the theory of evolution, they say, starts with life here on Earth. Then it starts advancing. They do not admit life came from non-life in the theory of evolution. So that's another theory. So they'll argue around it. And in all these things, there'll be a lot of arguments. So you really have to be careful. Okay, question number 23. In a cause-effect relationship, can the effect be greater than the cause? That's the first part. How does this relationship impact the creation of the universe and the debate of evolution versus creation? So the first part, in a cause-effect relationship, can the effect be greater than the cause? No. The cause is always greater. The energy required to create the universe, well, I'll come to that point. So let's do a little example here about this cause-effect relationship. So many of you know my wife, Letitia, is a quilt maker. And she cuts blocks of fabric. And then she sews them together. And then when you turn the backside, when you sew it together, there's a seam. So you have to iron that. She likes to iron the seam down. So she asked Rocky, can you create me a table that I could iron those seams open in my quilting? I said, well, I'll think about it. So in a cause-effect relationship, that is the effect, all right? So for me to create that table, what has to be done? Well, I have to create a design. I know I have to know the dimensions, the height, the table size. Is there going to be shelves, right? I have to go and purchase the wood. Now, where did the wood come from? Oh, the wood came from a tree located maybe in Washington. How long did it take that tree to go and all the energy involved? So quite a bit of energy to just to purchase the wood. Where that wood come from. Okay, then I got to use an electric saw. Where I get the electricity from? From power station. I got to generate it. I have an electric saw. Well, someone had to make that electric saw, right? So I had to assemble it. And then last of all, I had to finish it, sand it down and put whatever finish you wanted. And the point all here is, as was talked about, is the cause, pretty simple, has to be much greater than the effect, right? You can't put that table and pieces of board and let it create itself, right? The second thing to note here is that it's externally directed, right? I'm outside of this table here. I have to go through all these processes and do all these things. So it is externally directed. Now we'll take that, and now we apply the same understanding of this cause and effect relationship. Now we're here in the effect. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and put the universe. Now the universe is finite. Believe it or not, we don't know the limits of it, but Albert Einstein proved that it is finite. And it also, interesting, something beyond our comprehension, the universe is actually expanding today. When you say we're expanding too, we don't know. But through scientific laws, you can prove that the universe is expanding. But the universe has so much energy, right? So how much energy it took to create the universe? Well, you have to have a source. The energy has to be greater than what's in the universe. What has more energy than the universe? It is God in His infinite power. And you can see, again, the cause is God infinite, much, much greater than the universe. And also, note, it is also externally directed, right? God outside of the universe had to create that. So think about this on the cause-effect relationship. Again, God provided us the universe, the complexity of it, and tells us a lot about where the universe came about. Okay, question number 24. What is intelligent design? Question 24. What is intelligent design?
Did you say you got there with respect with your table?
Okay. It's the theory of intelligent design holds that a certain features of the universe and the living things are best explained by an intelligent cause, not an undirected process such as natural selection. And, of course, it does support creation. Go with me to Hebrews chapter 3, verse 4. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 4. Very famous verse here. As the writer of Philippians says, he says, and again, we find in the Bible, Steve's always made this point, there's some truths that are mentioned that are incidental to the point, but they're truths nonetheless. Note in verse 4, for every house is built by someone, right? This is a common, you know, right? Can't argue that. Every house is built by someone. But what? But the builder of all things is God. A very important verse to remember. Now, you say, well, okay, well, we have all these scientists. And you say, well, most scientists do not believe in evolution. Now, there are some scientists who do believe in God and creation, like we described, but they're far few between. Well, I have a quote here from, I consider probably the greatest scientist ever lived on this earth, is Albert Einstein. And he made this quote, and I'd like to go ahead and read it, what he says. Now, again, we went back to Romans 1:20. If the evidence is so overwhelming, if any person, scientist or whatever, is honest and looks at the data, he should come to the conclusion that God is creator, right? Well, here you have this man, Albert Einstein. I'll submit to you that he was very honest. Note what he says. This is, you can see the reference here. The harmony of natural law reveals an intelligence of such superiority that compared with it, all the systematic thinking and acting of human beings is utterly insignificant reflection. And so Albert Einstein believed in a creator. He believed in a creator like God. Now, Albert Einstein did not believe in a personal God. He didn't believe like in Jesus Christ and God is involved in a person's life. But in terms of the existence of the universe, he did believe in God. And there are, again, some scientists who are honest when look at the evidence. You just can't argue against it. You say, well, why do scientists so much believe? A lot of it is political. A lot of it, you'll be systemized, scientists will look frown upon you. Sometimes you might not be able to get grants if you believe in the creation account. I mean, there's just a lot of pressure put on scientists to believe in evolution. But when you look at the honest data, it does not support evolution. Okay, question number 25. What historical event had a tremendous impact on how the earth looks today? Genesis flood. That's a whole study in itself. It's very, very quite interesting. One of the things that's also very remarkable that explains a lot of things here is when you look at up to the time before the Genesis account, there's no evidence of any rain on the earth. Remember in the garden, how was the plants watered? It was mist. Very likely the scenario here before in the beginning, the earth was different. It was completely surrounded by a layer of very thick clouds that were all got the water. There was no rain. But when man sinned, God caused the Genesis flood, and it changed the weather patterns. It changed the whole foundation of the earth, the structure, the continents. And a very interesting study here on the Genesis flood. It's kind of a separate study in of itself. And the last question we have, list the six consequences of believing evolution. Say, why do we want to study it? And I would submit, sometimes the elderly say, I don't want to talk about evolution because, you know, it's meaningless. It's foolishness. Well, should you study it? Hopefully you made the point. But here are some six consequences of believing evolution. So I don't know what you put down. What consequences did you put down?
The theory of evolution and God can't coexist.
Right. Okay. Can't exist with God. Other consequences.
Destroys faith in the Bible.
Golly. Destroys faith in the Bible, our foundation. How critical is that for you to know about evolution, creation, be able to defend the faith? It's attacking the nature of the Bible. What other characteristics or consequences?
No soul.
No soul. Others?
No purpose in life.
No objective right or wrong.
No objective right and wrong. A lot of ones are good. I don't necessarily have exactly the same one, but you know, there's tremendous consequences. Let's go through the ones I had here, already been mentioned. Evolution destroys faith in the Bible, destroys faith in Jesus, destroys the faith in God. Yeah. What an attack. We've got to be ready for it. The second one here is the naturally survive. You know, might makes right. If you have the power and you were to do whatever you want to do, you have the right. And that's what Adolf Hitler did. He believed the Nazis were the super race. They were basically believed in evolution. They were believed that. And so Nazism is based on evolution. Again, we already made the points, any points, you kind of reiterate other points. Evolution is atheism. Evolution produces immorality about the sin, the right and wrong. And the last one, kind of connected with the super race, evolution encourages racial prejudice. We know Hitler had prejudices against blacks, against Catholics, anyone other than the Roman race. And it was all based on his understanding and belief in an evolution. So hopefully this refresher has been beneficial to you. I would encourage you that all these slides are going to be posted to the website and take a look at it. There's some questions I'm going to get back with, the one about the wolves and the dogs that Keith raised. If you have others, just let me know, and we'll try to address them. And take a look at the slides about these other missing links to see the origin of how they came with the missing link and the issues and the problems with that. So thank you for your work. I'm really happy to see a lot of you did the work and had answers, so I appreciate that. And hopefully you were benefited with that. So with that, we'll now have a song.